Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey folks, Les Raymond here with the Mindful Movement. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. I have an in-person interview today, which is always exciting. I have not had a chance to do a lot of these. Danush Sudan, someone I've known for a really long time, but I really don't know very well, is here today to chat with me. Danush's mother is my older sister's best bud from childhood, and I grew up maybe just a couple hundred yards from the house that his mother grew up in, and that's how I know him. I haven't spent a lot of time with him, and then we connected about 5 years ago by chance because my sister was in town and we caught a meal together, and it was very interesting because I hadn't seen him before that since he was like very small, and he was I think in his first year of college, and he started talking about meditation, and I'm not used to hearing young kids talk about meditation, so it took me by surprise. And now he's really delved in to just the world of energy and consciousness, and I looked at it as a great opportunity to learn. I've noticed that my tendency is to seek out generally people with a lot of experience to learn from. Yet I find myself over the years as a parent really seeing my children as my greatest teachers. So I'm excited to kind of, not challenge, but break down some of my patterns and look for more opportunities to learn from young, passionate people. And Danush is very bright and definitely passionate about what he's talking about today. So I thought it was a lot of fun to learn from him and to just chit chat and have a conversation about various things and how they relate to consciousness and energy and lifestyle. And it's been really neat to have him kind of come into my life the way he has. He lives locally, and he recently has delved into his own YouTube channel that I'm glad to support. So you'll hear about that in the conversation, and you could take a deeper dive into his work if you're interested. But seems like just a really passionate, great kid, and I really enjoy talking with him, and I hope that you do too. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond. Thanks for joining me today for another episode. I have Danush Sudan.
Yes,
Danush. Did I say that right?
Danush, yes. Sudan.
And we were just talking about cicadas. We're here in Maryland on the East Coast, and we're just checking our levels of the mics here. And there's a very fascinating phenomenon that's going on. And I don't know if it's not all over the world, is it?
Just the East Coast, I think, and just like around our Maryland area for the most part.
Yeah, so every 17 years, these cicadas crawl out of the ground, mm-hmm. and pretty much live in the trees. And it's hard to articulate how many there are. So if you've never experienced this before, basically our whole environment gets overtaken by billions of these flying bugs that seem to have very little purpose. Like they don't even eat.
No.
They live for, do you know how long the life cycle is?
Or? I think it's just till the summer and then they're done. And the thing is that's weird is that they come every 18 years.
17 years.
So last time they came, I was 5 years old. I'm 22 for your audience that's watching. And I remembered them being everywhere and just flying everywhere and causing a bunch of chaos. But I think it has something to do with the Schumann resonance. You know, the Schumann resonance is the...
So that's the frequency that the Earth is putting out.
Right. The frequency that the Earth is putting out. And maybe when it's at a certain high or whatever, then they're coming out. But of course, it's on a cyclical pattern. So it's very interesting to see how they react to the energies.
So what do you mean? You think the Schumann resonance has something to do with the 17-year nature of their cycle, or...?
I think that definitely plays a part, but all animals, they all respond to the energies in the environment, and especially humans. We're just very unconscious of it for the most part. So they respond to the energies, and when the energies change, when they increase, they'll start acting more erratic. Like, that's one thing I noticed, just kind of reading the frequencies every single day, which is what I like to do a lot. I think I should probably introduce myself.
We're going to. So what's funny, too, is this is nice, first of all. Thank you for joining me, Tanuj, in person. I haven't done a lot of in-person podcasts, so I get excited at the opportunity. And you knock on my door and I answer it and you say, hey, Uncle Les, which is always strange to me. I do have nephews and nieces, but there's not a lot of people that call me uncle.
Uh-huh.
And for those watching, I might not look like Tanuj's uncle, but... My older sister was best friends growing up basically with your mother, and that's where that came from. And we ran into each other. My sister was visiting me. We established 5 years ago.
Yes, 5 years ago.
So we're having lunch, and you must have been 17 or 18.
I was, yeah, somewhere around that age. I think it was 18, yeah.
And we're having lunch, and this is around the time where I'm kind of diving in a little deeper into my meditation practice. And you started talking about meditation. And yeah. I remember being taken aback by this young, tiny kid at the time that was talking about meditation as if he'd been doing it a while. And you were clearly really into it.
Yes.
And started telling me about your favorite styles. And I was like, whoa, that's kind of far out.
Yeah.
And then recently I learned that, you know, you mentioned energies earlier. You seem to be big in the exploration of energy. And I'm sure we'll get into that. And what that means. And you got a YouTube channel now called The Matrix Unveiled.
Yes, The Matrix Unveiled.
So I'd like to know what you're referring to when you talk about that. But I guess before that, how did you even get into this stuff?
Yeah, so I think my awakening process, it happened at a young age. So I was always in tune. And I think there are certain individuals, certain people that incarnate in this realm or this earth plane. This may be, I don't know how far.
This will definitely be the most woo-woo episode that we have on our podcast yet, which I'm excited for. I'm excited about the opportunity to learn from some young kid that's hip on energy and try to learn what there is to learn.
So the thing that I have to say about that is people call it woo-woo, but the truth is that this is all scientifically based. And the science has just not been come out. It has just not come out in our society because of the repressions of fear, of the way that the religion kind of still influences a lot of Americans. You know, a lot of Americans grew off Christianity. And so there's a lot of kind of repression of what's really happening in the world. And before I get too far into that, let me just talk about myself. So I had my first spiritual experiences at a very young age, around 4 or 5 years old, where I could feel energy. I could start to see what energy looks like. I could sense other presences around me, other what people would call ghosts, what people would call aliens, what people would call interdimensional beings. And these beings are very real.
What do you mean you would sense them? You would see them visually, or you would just get like a
a feeling in your body.
So you have something called an astral body, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Not really.
Okay, it's your energy. So okay. your energy body or your astral body is, it's like your spirit. And your spirit has a replica. You know, when you go to sleep at night, you're going into your dream state, right? So your dream state is a different state of awareness or of consciousness. And this is controlled by your dream body or your astral body. And so the astral realm is the realms that are unseen to our physical senses, but our pineal gland certainly picks it up, our pituitary gland. All of the technology that NASA and all these different corporations and governments and all these things, you know, all the seismic activity, how do you think they're reading those things? They're reading those frequencies in the atmosphere that contain these different energies.
That we can't see. They're not generally perceived through our nervous system.
Like. Right. But that is only because our level of consciousness has dropped so far when we stopped accessing our spiritual abilities.
Okay. So when you were a kid and you felt like you felt things that maybe other people didn't feel, did you speak out and like tell, you know, your family or so, your parents about this stuff?
So I did, but I also realized that even as I was telling them that they would never understand unless they experienced it themselves. It's kind of like me telling you all about chocolate ice cream and telling you how great it is, but you've never tasted chocolate ice cream.
Gotcha.
So no matter how much I tell you about it, it'll never make sense. You won't even believe that chocolate ice cream is real until you've tasted it yourself.
And you know, the idea of energy is interesting to me. When I heard recently that what we perceive through like the visible light spectrum, because I guess, you know, visible light is just this sliver of
1%
of the electromagnetic frequency. I think it's way less than that. That's what I was gonna allude to. I mean, I heard it was like a 1/1,000,000th or 1/10,000,000th, some crazy tiny sliver of what's out there. And when you hear, like, I guess I listened to, you know, like the Carl Sagans of the world, like the teachers of the cosmos. And, you know, there's this thing that there's all this material that we see, that I guess they just label as dark matter.
So
there's
and
they don't know really what it is, but there's a lot of it, which just makes you wonder, like, how much is going on that we're not aware of because we just don't perceive it? Like, maybe another animal that we're used to perceives something completely different just because they're not limited to the same slice of information.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that's actually what you said right there is scientifically proven. They have studied different animals. They've studied butterflies and birds and bees especially. Right. Bees see an ultraviolet light.
Ultraviolet light.
So ultraviolet light is like these different colors, like a plasmic color. In fact, ultraviolet light is one of those things that you can tune into in the astral realms, in the non-physical realms, which you can claim they're non-physical, but really what's happening is they're at a different frequency level. So everything is made up of energy and frequencies and vibrations. And higher frequencies exist at a higher level, a higher octave. It's just science, just like in music, you know, higher frequency note is up here, lower frequency note is up here. So if you have all of the humans on one frequency bandwidth, they're not going to see these other layers that may be other intelligences that are around in those spaces. And if you are tuned into that, you're picking up a lot more information than a lot of other people, you know?
Other intelligences. I'm going to have to push back on some of these things. But
yes, absolutely. You should.
So
you should never believe.
When you say higher frequencies, so do you think that when you are trying to like alter your state of consciousness through whatever tool, so let's say you're using meditation, you're using sound therapy, it could be a compound that you're ingesting, like whatever it is that on some level a raising of a frequency?
Absolutely, yes. Because what's happening, what is a frequency? A frequency is the amount of energy that's oscillating in a certain location. It's literally the amount of prana. Well, I don't want to use a new age word, but The amount of electromagnetic energy for the scientifically minded folk that have only tapped into, you know, electromagnetism, which there are forces beyond electromagnetism. But all this energy that's in a certain location. Now, if we speed it up, if we increase the speed of this energy, we increase the atoms, right? They told you in science class that molecules and atoms are bouncing around. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens when you take a liquid and you heat it on the stove? It starts to evaporate. Why? Because the frequency and the vibration of the atoms have increased. Therefore, they are gaseous. Therefore, they're less physical. Right? Does that make sense?
So the lower the frequency, the more solid,
dense,
it is. And then we observe it more as matter.
Exactly. Condensed vibrations. And so when you get to a crazy high level of frequency through meditation, through consciousness work,
why aren't you just disappearing into a gas?
Well, that's the thing. Here's the thing. Because we are existing as humans in this egoic state, there's no way I could possibly be sitting here talking to you in an interview, melding with the floor. But from your perception of reality, you would see me just standing here because you're seeing things at a slower rate. If I was sitting here and I'm at a crazy high rate, I could perceive myself melting with everything. But you wouldn't see it because you're observing it at your level of frequency.
Okay, so what if I also was through meditation or whatever, raising to try to resonate with whatever frequency that you felt that you were melting the floor? Are you saying I would then perceive you as melted on the floor?
You would see the same local space, the same dimension that we are in. It's kind of like how we agree right now. The camera's right there and it's a solid object.
We are in agreement with it.
Right. But if we were to raise our frequency and experience reality in a different way, even if we were to just close our eyes, neither one of us would now see the camera. We may be able to hear the shutter of the lens close. Maybe we can feel, if we have some sort of presence, we can feel maybe the energy of the camera. But there's all these layers of perception that we have. Like even, you know, I'll give you an example that everyone has. Like, oh, you're driving and maybe you get a weird feeling, or you get a text message, or you just get this weird intuition. Have you ever had that happen before?
Yeah, I think probably most people have, yeah.
Yeah, so, or, you know, somebody texts you, and right before they text you, you pull out your phone, and they text you. Like, that's a synchronicity. That's a perception where you tuned in for a second into a higher reality, and you got the information that was coming to you, and you registered it on a physical. See, as I said that, somebody just sent me a message. So that's another synchronicity right there. So that's proof right there for you.
Is that proof?
It's not proof. It's not proof.
How many messages you get a day? Couldn't that
so,
be a coincidence?
So here's the thing.
You're 22 years old?
22, yeah.
Don't you get text messages all day
I
long?
I get messages all day long.
Okay. So I don't.
But I'm not using that as proof. If you come at this from an analytical perspective and you try to hear these words and you try to like analyze things, and I'm not talking about you specifically, but anybody that's listening, and this is the fallacy with the logical argument. It's like you're trying to logically understand chocolate.
Right.
It never works.
It's a right brain thing.
It's an intuitive thing. And back to the initial thing that we were talking about was, I think that there are human beings. There are a lot of kids. People my generation, I don't know if you could consider me a kid really, but
I definitely consider you a kid.
There's a lot of
your mother used to
I know
drive me to school.
Well, she was driving you to school. You weren't driving her, right?
Right.
Yeah, but I think that there's a lot of you know, your son and your daughter are probably those kinds of kids that are awakened to a higher reality. They may not understand it, but that's just my guess because of your guys' proclivity towards meditation and towards yoga and consciousness work, that they will ultimately lead down that path as well.
Where do you think that tuning in comes from? You mentioned the pineal gland earlier. I think I read a couple of books by Joe Dispenza where he refers to the pineal gland almost as a liquid crystal antenna of some sort, and that when you activate it, whatever that means, activate it to whatever, like it picks up some of the other things that are going through that we don't normally see. Kind of like, you know, channel 5 is always going through the air, but you won't see it until you tune your TV to channel 5.
Exactly. That's exactly how it works. So it's a radio antenna, and the pineal gland is a piezoelectric device. Piezoelectric.
What does that mean?
Yeah, piezoelectric means that it's a crystalline device, but actually what it really means is that it is a pump kind of gun. So it's like one of those things that you have to wind up. Like a TV, remember those old TVs? I wasn't even alive, but I know about them. The old TVs that you had to crank up just to get going?
I'm not even that old. I don't remember ever cranking up. I remember rolling down the window.
There you go. Yeah, that's something that I would, yeah. So rolling down the window, right? You have to roll down the window for it to even work. That's the same thing with the pineal gland. The pineal gland is like, it has to be pumped with oxygen, with energy, with biomagnetism. In order to activate. And since it's a crystalline technology, what is a crystal? A crystal, well, our cell phones and our computers don't even work without silicon. So silicon is a storage of information. And it's like a radio transmission as well as a sender and a receiver. So it's like an antenna and a storage. So in fact, if they started studying the pineal gland, they would have the best technology ever.
So it's hard to study because it's in the middle of your head, basically.
It's in the middle of your head, and the second you crack the head open, the thing is not working anymore because the person's probably not going to survive. But if you do study the pineal gland and they're still alive, you know, it only works when it's activated. It's a piezoelectric device. So the pineal gland has to be activated. It has to be turned on through an illumination of consciousness, through breath work, through yoga, through meditation, through some psychedelics can definitely help you. But I like to, like for beginners, to just teach them how to move energy, just how to feel energy, how to work with energy in a conscious way. Once you do that, you have your Christos consciousness activated.
So do you have a go-to method that you use to, that you lean on to like tap into that or to stimulate or, as you say, activate the pineal gland?
Yeah, absolutely. Like just focusing on your intention inside this magnetic center within your body, because your energy moves through your intention, just through focusing. Can you feel it right now?
No, it's been a long day. I'd have to probably spend some time.
So yeah, just
getting in the zone first.
yeah, understood. So just for people, like just to feel into your energy and to feel into the magnetic sense that's inside. Think about it. Where is my brain illuminating from? Like, where is the center of my consciousness? If you ask yourself that question, you will find it somewhere deep inside here. Like you'll be like, okay, I'm internally inside, but I'm like right in the middle, internally inside my head. You know?
When you say, I'm going to stop you and push back a little bit along
Fair
the way
enough.
Here.
Yeah, of course.
You're loose with some words that, and there's some words that I've pondered a lot and get and go in circles with, and I don't know. And a lot of this is going to be, is restricted by language. I think, you know, we only have so many words to explain this stuff. But when you say consciousness, how would you define the thing that you're referring to?
So consciousness is awareness. It's right here, right now, being present. And this is a loose definition of consciousness. Consciousness goes, there's a very long definition of consciousness, which when you get to the supreme, right? But just through you and me, conscious right here, you're here. Unconsciousness would be you asleep, you know, in a nap or going deep into deep sleep. You're not conscious when you're in that deep sleep. Or very little consciousness
present.
So just
the act of being awake or the act of being aware?
Aware. Not just necessarily awake, because you can be awake and then go into a mental projection or like a, you know, like an imagery in your mind. You're daydreaming. That was the word I was looking for. Daydreaming. Where you're not really conscious of the physical reality too much. Now you went into your own mind. And you created a daydream. You know, when you fall asleep or you're just like, you're zoning out so hard, or even in a meditation, now you're deeply conscious of something else. You're not conscious no more of the room. You're conscious of the inner workings of your mind and the blackness that you find just in, you know, that internal space. Does that make sense with the consciousness thing?
A little, maybe. I don't know. I mean, you know, these things are kind of mind-bending to think about, but I could tell you an experience. So I mentioned Dispenza. Are you familiar?
Yes, Joe Dispenza, yes.
So I read a couple of his books. And, you know, one of the books has kind of a, I guess, a how-to stimulate this pineal gland. And it was essentially, like you refer to, it needs to be pumped. It was essentially trying to pump, like, the cerebral spinal fluid.
Yes.
Which normally circulates like once or twice every 24-hour cycle to like accelerate that process. So it was a combination of breathing practices with some held tension to try to, you know, pump fluid up. And I practiced a little bit and it felt good. Just like, I mean, when I do breath work, which is pretty much every day, it always feels good. Like I always am glad after I did it than before. So one night I was getting into it and I might have had some compounds in my system, if I recall, which I do find can sometimes distract you from productive meditation or breath work. But then sometimes if like things are going
sinks
well,
up, baby.
It syncs up and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I feel like this was one of those nights. And I take a bath usually at night to like wind down. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the bath like doing this breath stuff. And then all of a sudden, like my field of vision changes dramatically. Mm-hmm. Everything goes black. And I see this, I'm going to sound loopy on this, but I saw a ring. No matter where I looked, it was like this amber, fluorescent-y, luminescent thing that was like just a ring of this material and black everywhere else. And I kind of freaked out. I got up. I remember just saying like, oh my God, oh my God. Yeah. Like, and I couldn't turn it off.
Of course not.
And no, this is the weird thing. Like I get out of the tub and I'm walking, I'm, you know.
It's following you.
Like no matter, I'm feeling the counter. Like I know the counter's there. And like, no matter what direction I look, all I see is that. And eventually like it doesn't feel scary or bad, but it's so strange. And I wound up laying down on the floor so I don't hurt myself. And Sarah comes in. It's like, you know, what's the matter with you? Like, you're not going to believe this. And I don't know. I think I said like, oh my God, like 100 times.
Yeah.
And she's at this point like laughing at me. And I'm like, I think I might be tripping. I think I did something.
You're tripping.
Like, I went too far. Or
go further.
Yeah. So, but it didn't feel bad. It wasn't scary. It was definitely intense. I could see how it could definitely have been perceived scary.
Yeah.
But I knew that I was tinkering with things in my chemistry. So, like, what do you think happened in a situation? And I know I'm not crazy. Like, I might do weird shit, but I know I'm not a crazy person.
Right.
I know that that happened.
Right.
And I've done psychedelics before, so like I know that we could experience things that are very different than they seem to be in like day to day life. So I know there's other things there somehow that we could access. What do you think that is? Do you think that is the pineal gland being tripped and then creating that image through chemistry?
Absolutely. I think that what you experienced was a mystical state of consciousness.
A mystical state.
A mystical state. So there are so many types of mystical states of consciousness. And it's kind of like, how many different fish are there? How many different trees are there? You know, there's literally infinite. So you can have these different experiences, and these different experiences show you, oh, reality is not at all what I thought it was. Because if I can meditate and experience something that is profound, where I'm seeing things differently, how could reality be what it was before when it's just being altered so quickly through just a few experiences, through a few breathing experiences? And then,
and you think that is because the frequency that your body is existing in is changes increase
your energy field.
Energy field.
So there's this experiment called the double slit experiment. Have you heard of that?
That's like the wave and particle thing.
And now they've had to add a third.
So let's double click that for a little bit. How would you explain that double slit? That's like basic physics.
Basic physics, and so basic quantum physics. So, you know, now it's a third thing. Now they've discovered light can be three things: a photon, a waveform, and I can't remember what the other thing is. But it's like a in between state of being a photon and a waveform. Okay. So it's very interesting. But what's happening is, see, we don't actually see from our eyes. our brain sees. Our eyes are inputting light, and then our brains are processing it. But if you change the neurochemistry within your brain, you experience the reality differently. You increase your serotonin, you start feeling more wakeful. You increase your melatonin, you start feeling more sleepy. You increase your dopamine, you start feeling really good. You increase your dimethyltryptamine, you start seeing into different realities. You start seeing into the parallel realities.
So dimethyltryptamine, also known as DMT, that's the chemical that is in some psychedelics, some of the more powerful psychedelics in the world, but also is thought to be created in the body. And you think that's what's created when the pineal gland is stimulated?
Yes, yes. It's endogenously created, meaning internally. And it's not just in the pineal gland. It's also in the eyes. It's also in the liver. It's also in the diaphragm. And that's why the breathing techniques, that's why breath work gets you into a different state of consciousness.
It's in the diaphragm, the muscle, or it's in the lungs?
It's in the diaphragm, the muscle.
It's in the diaphragm is just the muscle that goes up and down.
Yeah, but the scientists have not discovered that it's actually produced all in the human body. It's all in the human body. The problem is that the stomach acids neutralize DMT. So that's why you don't just get high when you eat grass, because grass contains DMT. Right? The stomach acids neutralize all of this DMT, but however, when it's in the bloodstream, it acts different.
So from what I understood, DMT is a step beyond. So we have this tryptophan pathway. So you have tryptophan, which is amino acid, which eventually works its way to serotonin, which eventually works its way to melatonin. And then I thought from melatonin, it can go to
amino
DMT.
Amino acids are different. Amino acids are protein synthesis.
Well, amino acids are the building blocks of proteins.
Right, but these are neurotransmitters. So neurotransmitters work differently.
But right, so they're, well, but they start, like, that pathway begins at tryptophan.
Yes, yeah, yeah, so, I see what you're saying, yeah.
And then it goes to like 5-HTP, I think, and then tryptophan, and there's several steps between serotonin and melatonin, but then there's, I think, one or two steps from melatonin. So
there you go.
Melatonin is creating DMT.
N,N-dimethyltryptamine. That's the official name. And there is just, I think it's just one carboxyl molecule, well, one carboxyl unit. Like carboxyl is like it's like a structure of carbon and how it works. There's one or two molecules that are removed from the melatonin, and that converts into DMT. It's like a very clean conversion. It's like you just drop the O off of one oxygen molecule, and then it turns into N,N-dimethyltryptamine, and that happens.
Is that what you learn in school?
I didn't learn this in school.
Okay. Are your parents watching this like, that's what he's studying in college?
They don't teach anything useful in college or school. Let's be real. This is through self-study and then pioneering a field that mankind has forgotten about, basically. So this converts into dimethyltryptamine through our nighttime. This is why we experience dreams. Dreams are hallucinations, so they say, but they're not really hallucinations. They're experiences of other planes of existence, just like you experienced with your experience where you had the blinding light, right? The violet light. And for a second, you were able to produce enough. You might have also been high off of oxygen, like just from the breathing. And you were able to basically interfere with the default mode network, which is the thing that runs your ego, the thing that runs your sense of separation or sense of identification enough. You basically mess with the signal enough just to give yourself a sense of perception of something else. And a lot of people, when they experience that, they freak out. Like first 15 times that something like this happened to me, I freaked out. I was like, what's going on? Like, you know, because you don't know what's going on. Your reality is one thing for so many years, and then you have this mind-blowing change, and you're like, I don't even know how to express myself because I know that you're not really there in the way that I thought you were there at one point.
Yeah, I think if I didn't have a history of like some psychedelic experiences where I know that they end.
Yes.
And like, you're not gonna die.
No.
I think if I didn't have those, then that night a few months ago when this happened, I would have been terrified.
Exactly.
I would have been terrified that, like, I was never going to be able to see again, or, like, this is it for the rest of it. Like, I've gone too far. There's no going back. which I'm grateful for those past experiences, so I could be like, I had a little more curiosity. Even though I was, like, blown away, yes. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
I was aware enough to say, like, what is it? I'm not dead. What is it? What am I experiencing now?
That's the whole point.
And it lasted, like, a few minutes. And then I'm so silly. Like, for several nights after that, I was chasing it.
Yes, yes, yes.
I was like, I want to get back there. I want to go
further.
And I really tried. And the night it happened, there was no trying. I was just, like, doing my thing. It's which is interesting. Like, you know, it's one of those, like, you know, you put your hand in water and you try to grab it, it's gone. Like, you have to allow it.
You have to be slippery like the water. You cannot be the hand to try to grab the water. You must become the water and then explore the depths of the ocean.
Yeah, well said.
You see?
Yeah.
Like, that is the way that I can get into the mystical state pretty easily within a meditation. That's not to brag or anything, but that's just because I figured out what to do is you let go of the ego, you let go of the attachments. As soon as I started dialing that in my mind, I started going into other spaces that would be considered psychedelic. But once you know how to go back and forth, all you're doing is you're getting information from, like, the main central unit of the universe and then coming back into your physical body. Like, that was fun. You know, gotta go eat dinner, gotta go take out the trash, gotta go do this, back to the mystical state. And then you learn how to navigate these states.
And then what do you think is the benefit of doing that? Of, like, how do you feel that that practice of dipping your toe in, I guess, what you're considering higher frequencies of consciousness, how does that translate to your life when you're taking the trash out or doing some other thing? Or
so I think that, well, number one, it shows you that life is an illusion. So what we're seeing is not really what's happening. It shows you that death is not real. It shows you that there's nothing really to fear. It shows you that there is something called a God or a universal consciousness. It shows you that you have a higher purpose. Your purpose is not to just live and work and to be a slave for the matrix, for society. It shows you that you have a sense of individuality and creativity. It shows you that each moment is a precious expression. It shows you what you're actually inside of, what your life actually means, what it actually is. And it makes you a lot happier, makes you a lot more content. So I couldn't even imagine my life without any of these things, because if I lived a normal life without these experiences, I don't know. I would not be the same person, but I also wouldn't have any life. There would be no life. This is life itself, this energy. You see, so you can't exist without this energy. You just become a normal person that takes everything for granted. They take the very chair that they sit on for granted because they believe it's a chair, instead of understanding it's a cosmic expression of consciousness.
But, and you're no more separate from the chair than you are a loved one or whatever.
Yes. Now, you don't have to take it. I mean, you will take it to that far once you reach that level. But also, you can also be like, wow, I'm so appreciative that I'm not in that state right now, and I can just sit here and experience me as a chair being separate. So you also respect duality. You have an immense appreciation for the oneness of things, but you're also like, wow, duality is awesome. Because without duality, I couldn't go and get my favorite food from Great Sage. I wouldn't even understand the difference between the food and me. So you appreciate all of the materialistic pleasures even more, and the spiritual pleasures. So it's a win.
Shout out to Great Sage. That's where we had our last meeting 5 years ago.
Yeah.
my sister's favorite restaurant in the town I live. So it's interesting. You alluded to the word God earlier, and that word could be very polarizing.
Yes. Yes.
And I've spent my time thinking about what that word points to, if you will, and I've never been like, a religious person, or like as the traditional religious like practices, but I've always been curious of, you know, what makes all the things the way they are, and like, who's push and go here to make all this happen? And like, when I, and every time I do that, I seem to go down a rabbit hole of like quantum physics on some level. Like, as you start looking at things smaller, and you see, like, at first you think, oh, we're made up of all these organs and tissues, but then it's like, oh no, they're cells, they're smaller, and then you have all these parts, the mitochondria and the lysosome, all these parts of the cells, and then you keep going, you get these molecules, and they're made up of atoms. And then if you look at the atom close, or I've never looked at one close, I've looked at drawings and I've heard people speak on it, it seems like the individual atom is this big thing of empty space that has these little parts in it, and you know, some are protons called, some are neutrons, some are electrons, and it's mostly nothing though. And then when you blow those things up, the parts, they're also mostly nothing with little parts. And then you realize that like the carbon atom in my body is right now changing with carbon in this wood, carbon in you.
Yes.
So I guess my question always comes down to like, how does this carbon know to be me? And then when it's over there, it knows to be you. And when I think of what the word God like points to, I think of it's whatever information that is in there, so that this, so when it's over here, it's part of me, and when it's over there, it's part of you. And that to me, like, and then I get like this dead end. Like, there's we know that everything is energy. We know that everything's
logical mind
vibrating, or free. There's a freak oscillating, as you put it. We know energy oscillates, and there's waves, and then when you observe them, they become particles or solids, I guess. But there's some intelligence in there for it to show up as different things.
Right.
And I guess when I think of, when I've like sat back and dived into my own mind, thinking about what God is, I feel like if I had to point to it, it would be that. It would be the information, or just the fact that it is. Do you have like an idea of what you think of, or when you refer to that, refer to the word God?
Yeah. So I think that your explanation is pretty good. And God is not something that can be, like, I don't think anybody can genuinely tell you what God is. Like, if I told people what I think it is, that's like me telling what ice cream is again. So it doesn't really help, but it can give you a general idea. Now, I've experienced what I would consider to be God consciousness, or when you become one with the Creator, or you understand that you are the Creator. And so it no longer becomes, oh, what is this thing that's labeling the carbon atom as my leg? Whereas you realize you are the one that is creating that illusion. The very essence of who you are, your very nature as a being. You're not just a being, you are being in of itself. Not a being, but being. So the very essence, the very soup, all of this mixture of everything, all this intelligence, it's pure intelligence. It's what I've been shown it to be. Pure cosmic intelligence. Intelligence that you cannot, write a scientific literature paper on. Sure, you can, but that's only one element of this pure intelligence. So by dissecting things, which is what the scientists do, they will take the atoms and split them apart and break them apart. Can you study an apple or an animal by chopping them up into pieces?
To some degree.
but not really. Because if you, okay, let's say you take a deer and you chop up the deer into different pieces. Now you studied the deer, right? No. But wouldn't it be more intelligent to study the deer when it's roaming around freely?
Right.
You can't really learn anything about the pieces.
Okay.
So, but the very problem with this thing is that if we know everything is light, we know that light changes its behavior based off of observation in of itself. Just look at your kid. You know, if you ignore him, he starts getting angry. If you look at him, he gets happy. That's light changing its behavior on a very fundamental level.
So you're referring to that slit experience. That's kind of what that refers to. Like, energy behaves like a wave, like light.
Until it is you look light. At it. It is light.
It is light. And then you it doesn't become it. Matter until it's observed.
Exactly. Exactly.
So does the tree that falls in the forest, no one's there, make noise? Or
right, exactly. That's the question. And my answer to that would be, no, it makes no noise, because if no one is observing it, there is no tree. It's in limbo. It doesn't exist.
So yeah, so this
it's
part,
materialistic mindset. Okay. That's the problem. I so know what your question is.
It's a little challenging for me.
Right.
So like, I go out, I see a tree, it's there. I come back here, the tree's still there.
Oh, is it?
Well, is that what quantum entanglement is? The once I've seen that once, and then I have
a memory.
A memory.
You only have
I
a
have
memory.
A relationship between the parts in my body and the parts that I saw, so that they will always be entangled, and I always will have a reference
yes.
of that existence.
Yes, one part of source or God consciousness recognizes another part of God consciousness. It's like a loading screen. You've loaded into the game, and now you've saved your location. If you've ever played video games, I'm sure you have.
I don't really play video
you
games.
You don't play video games? Okay, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
I'm 43 years old.
Well, okay, so if you load something up on a computer, you know, a project, it's saved its files, okay. It's saved the project, you know, for the editing people out there, all of us that make YouTube videos. So you'll save the components, just like you save a relationship, just like you save a connection with a tree or in your memory. But the tree is not there unless you observe it. And there's nobody to observe it unless you are aware that someone's observing it. Everything else is happening inside your mind. It's a very hard thing to understand and hear these words and to get it, because the materialistic paradigm has enslaved so many people's consciousness. Okay. Materialistic meaning like this is physical matter. Whereas we understand things are quantum. Like, even science itself has proven that materialism is wrong, and that quantum reality is, in fact, the true science that is true. And when you look at the quantum, you understand the quantum world and the quantum universe and the quantum reality is things are changing in its behavior constantly. They're constantly transmitting new frequencies, and they're actually one giant intelligence. That's what the quantum reality is really talking about, one giant intelligence.
Where do you learn these things? Who have been the people that inspire you to?
So there's a lot of different teachers that I've definitely learned. I can talk about a few. So number one, there's a guy, of course, Alan Watts. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with Alan Watts.
I've binged on him a few times.
Yeah, he's got great stuff, Alan Watts. There's another guy right now that I really enjoy listening to. His name is Actualize.org. Leo Gura, he's a very spiritually enlightened being. Another person, Sadhguru, is very well known. I'm sure you've heard of him.
I have, yeah.
Osho is another very interesting figure that I've been kind of researching into lately. There's other teachers as well, but a lot of the real understanding has come from my own mystical experiences. It has not come from a book. Like,
is this a daily practice for you to devote time
to? Yes.
To...
It's my life now. It's my career. I made a career out of it.
So what does that look like? Paint a picture for us. What does that look like, your current practice?
So my current practice, I don't know if I talked about this with you last time, but I practice something called aerokinesis or psychokinesis, which is it's a glorified form of energy movement. Basically, it's the ability to move objects with your mind. As crazy as that sounds.
All right, wait, hold on. I'm going to push back here. Move objects, meaning like you could move your water bottle with your mind?
Not like that, okay. In the sense that I work with the energies of nature. And I, like, yes, it's possible. It's physically possible to move this. Now, can I do it at this moment? No. But is it possible? Yes. I work with the energies of nature. So I work with the air. And I can feel the air as an extension of myself, because it's all consciousness, right? So if you expand your consciousness enough, you become the air. Now, air is an extremely light element. It's very much physical, but it's also free enough to the sense where you can feel it move past you. So as I connect with the trees and with the air, I become one with the trees and one with the air. And this is through meditation and through simply just expanding my consciousness, which it's kind of like moving an arm. I don't know how to explain moving an arm, but you have to map your energy signature with your brain. It's like a new level that you're understanding of your nervous system, basically.
I think many people could relate to the idea of when you're in nature, if you're paying attention, which I guess I would consider that's like another way of looking at being mindful. Like
mindful.
You're paying attention. And that a connection with said nature seems to be cultivated without effort and
yes.
work. And you're tapping into, I don't know if you're tapping into some kind of primal root that we have, that we just spent more time in nature before we had like houses and such, or there's something else going on there where you really are connected and you're just getting a glimpse into it. You're being reminded on some level that you are. But there are times where I spent a lot of time. I got, you know, a trail in the woods behind the house, and that's one of my many sanctuaries. And, you know, if I walk that trail for a half hour, at some point, like, it does seem to kind of blend, like, I kind of blend in.
With the environment.
And it's almost like all the bugs accept me. And the yes. leaves are like, we see you.
There you go.
Like, the tree in this, you know, like,
it's woo-woo.
I mean, it's like, I feel seen and yeah. part of it by yeah. that. And I could see so much. Like, you could kind of open your focus and you're just staring, and it's as if you could see 10,000 individual leaves rustle in the wind simultaneously, which on another day, if I'm not like in that zone, I could be in the same spot, the wind could be the same miles per hour, and you don't see
right.
that. The leaves are going, but you don't see them. There's something interesting. I remember there was a time where, there was one of the tough times in my life where I had a lot of like emotional suffering going on for things in my life situation. Some of it was health related and some of it was like family related. And I got in this habit to go practice like a form of meditation, usually like a Qigong style practice, by this one tree that mm-hmm. my family knows I name Tree. And like they know to sprinkle my ashes around that tree one day. But like going out to this tree on a regular basis, it didn't take long before like there was a legitimate relationship
yes.
being developed.
Mm-hmm.
And there were days where it really didn't feel one way. Like, I'm the intelligent human and I'm here and I see you.
No.
Like, I felt like on some level that tree was a companion and it was there and it was doing its role in kind of helping me through whatever growth I had. And I would go up to it, I'd put my hand on it, I would acknowledge it, and I would express some form of like gratitude. And then I would turn around, so it was to my back, and I used it as like support for my spine in a way. It's like this tall, mm-hmm. strong, vertical energy that I was like borrowing. Like, I felt like I'm going to borrow this energy from you while I do my practice here. And I want you to know that I'm not taking you for granted.
Right.
Like, I want this tree to know that I really appreciate it being willing to offer this thing to me.
Yeah. So you intuitively felt that you were receiving something.
And that's probably the craziest thing I've said on this podcast.
Well, it's true. The trees are very, very intelligent creatures. They sense, you know. I was gonna say something, but I was like, that's too woo woo.
Have you ever read the book The Secret Life of Trees?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's interesting.
But I do know about their secret lives.
Yeah. They're way more intelligent than
yes.
we give them credit for.
They're more intelligent than us.
Oh, they've been here longer.
Yes, I would. Yeah, that's, see, when someone says no, they're not. They're so dumb, they can't move. I'm like, well, you have to understand that they're older than you, and they're taller than you, and they're bigger than you, and they probably look healthier than you as well. You know?
If you think plants are so intelligent, why do you eat
why
them
do you
so
eat
much?
Them? Why you because eating? They taste delicious. And I have to eat something as a human.
You fair enough.
You know? I have to eat something. I mean, you can survive off sunlight. That's another conversation. But as a 22-year-old, you know, human, I would have to do some human stuff. I can't just live in the cosmos.
You have to do some human stuff, right?
You know?
I don't know how we led down to that, but into the tree story. You were talking about being a part of nature with your practice, like this daily practice of...
Aerokinesis is what I was. But basically, the daily practice is me going into nature and communing with nature, connecting with nature, feeling the energy, being at one with nature, and then also the elements start to move with me. So the air starts to move with me, the water starts to move with me, the earth, I can feel the earth as me.
Do you feel like you're affecting it, or you're just connecting and tuning into it?
It's both. So it's not just that I'm connected into it, but it's also that I am a conscious creator that knows its own ability to create and manifest the reality. So I can start to tap into these energies and create the energy that I want, the way that I want. Just like you guys did with your podcast and your YouTube channel. You created a mindful connection, a mindful movement, right? So it's the same thing, but just in the nature space. So next time you go to your trail, see if you can push the energies one way. Get some of the leaves to move in the way that you want. Maybe I can show you some of that after the podcast.
Okay. You referred to the Matrix earlier, and your channel is called The Matrix Unveiled. What are you referring to? Is this like the same Matrix from like the movie The Matrix?
Not really. Not really. The Matrix, I would say, is the mind. The way I would describe Matrix, because that's another good question that people have asked me before too, and people are like, oh, so you just believe in the movie? I'm like, no, that's not at all what my channel
I worship the movie.
Yeah, that's not at all what my channel is about. The Matrix represents this collective unconscious mind that has gotten itself into a lot of unconscious behavior, very behavior that has not any truth in it. So the way that society has raised itself, the way that the politicians act, the way that the people act, the way that the people interact, the level of consciousness that people exist in, what we do, the way that we believe society is, the very fact that we don't understand that everything is God consciousness and we are an extension of that creator. In fact, we are the creator itself. When you tap into anything less than that understanding, you're in the Matrix. You're a victim. When you play the victim game, you're like, oh, my life sucks. This happened to me. That happened to me. Which everyone has hardships, of course. But when you have reality and you're like enslaved to your reality, you're enslaved to your 9-to-5 job, you're enslaved to your unhappiness, you're enslaved to your kids, you're enslaved to your divorce, your marriage, or whatever. Those things are the Matrix. That's the Matrix of your own unconsciousness. And so unveiling that is an unveiling of consciousness. Realizing you're the sovereign creator here. So your life goes from complete chaos to shambles. You have to go down before you can go up. It has to completely break apart.
You need some suffering.
You need some suffering to trigger you into this realization of awareness. And the suffering, you know, just because you have one realization doesn't mean that you're now in nirvana, you're now enlightened. Like, I'm by no means enlightened. I have my own problems. But compared to a normal person, there's a huge difference in the consciousness level through development. And then through these, you know, extensions of mystical experience after mystical experience after mystical experience for years and years and years, you develop, I guess you could say, the enlightened consciousness. You start to become an embodiment of the truth. So that's what it means to be, that's what it means to unveil the Matrix, I guess you could say.
Do you think when people refer to, like, the saints of the past or, you know, people that within religions they held up as teachers, that that's kind of what they were able to tap into and that they were trying to teach?
Yes, I think that they're teaching the exact same thing. And they understood it in their times. And a lot of these saints and teachers have gotten to very, very high levels. You know, like Saint Germain or some of the saints, they could levitate. They could fly. They could do crazy things. Yes, there was a few saints that were able to levitate.
How do you know this?
Well, I don't know it personally. I don't. Okay. That's not true. Yeah. But through the history archives, you know? Now, I've seen my own crazy things, and I've done my own things that definitely defy science, defy our rational understanding of science. But again, the material paradigm is wrong. So just from my understanding, like, okay, I could see how that could be possible in a certain amount of time, after a certain amount of practice, a certain amount of sadhana, which is what the Indians call daily spiritual practice, right? Even Jesus, Muhammad, all these people, they had certain characteristics that showed their divinity or showed their ability to tap into something more because they understood it. They were able to channel it in a physical way.
Okay. All right. So taking a back step. So when you refer to the matrix, it's like kind of being stuck where you haven't started to observe yourself on some level, so that you're just kind of going through the motions of life and you're not paying attention. It's really like you're not being mindful. You're not paying attention. So you're just in it, stuck in it. And you're trying to encourage people to lift the veil and like to see beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes deeper than just like the basic self-help development or the basic personal development, where I think a lot of people get stuck. They're like, okay, I made more money and I got a better relationship. But do you understand who you are at a core level? Do you understand what you are? Until you have that answer, until you have that knowing, it's not a logical thing. Until you understand and experience the totality of consciousness, or at least get glimpses so you're on the right path.
To have a reference point.
Yes. So you're like, okay, I see that this is not what I thought it was. This is a simulation for all words entailed, but that's not a good representation of the word. So we have to be careful. Like the matrix lingo kind of came with the digital age. And I saw that as, oh, this is a really good way of explaining the reality to people. And it could be used. And the word matrix, there's more depth to it as well when you get into the multidimensional aspects of reality.
But so on some level, you're saying it's the inability or the you haven't seen yourself in relation to everything as like one whole thing. So there's like still some ego there, which I guess will drive suffering and like cruelty. It'll drive the kind of shitty behavior that humans do towards either one another or the environment or whatever. Like bad things in the world take place. People do bad things because they don't see that they are that. Like if you hurt someone, mm-hmm. you think that they're separate. You don't realize that you're hurting yourself and hurting them because you're stuck in this matrix. And so you hurt them.
That is on a, yeah, that's on one level and that makes sense. But yeah, I would say you got it pretty much. But the truth is like understanding, experiencing it 24/7. So
is that possible, you think? Is that like what the Buddha did?
On some levels, yes, it is possible. It's definitely
possible.
Why
would you want that? Then how would you ever engage?
Oh, reality becomes a lot more fun. It's kind of like when you're lucid dreaming. When you're lucid dreaming, have you ever lucid dreamed?
I haven't. We've had some lucid dreamer folks reach out to the channel. They want to come on, and I haven't dipped my toe in yet.
So when you lucid dream, which is like a preliminary, it's like first you must become aware in the dream state before you come aware here. And as you lucid dream and as you start to realize I'm the creator of my reality, like everything I'm dreaming up, this whole kitchen isn't even real. I dreamt up the kitchen. This whole house isn't even real. I dreamt up the house. Once you have that level of consciousness in this reality, then you realize it's all a giant dream. And I'm a character in the dream, but I'm also the entire dream itself. And the I is not this physical ego I. It is the cosmic intelligence that runs through everything. And my job is to become self-aware that I am the cosmic intelligence and that I am the creator of my reality. Therefore, the other aspects of my cosmic intelligence, the other nodes that are sleeping in the dream, must become self-aware as well. The only way to true love and happiness and peace in the world is for every single human to awaken.
I didn't understand any of that lucid dreaming stuff.
Okay, so the lucid dreaming is becoming aware that you're dreaming. So, you know, when you're in a dream, you're like going through the motions.
Okay.
That's the same thing in this reality. People are just going through the motions day, another day. Tomorrow's Friday. Tomorrow's Saturday. Well, another day. No motivation, no ingenuity, no creativity. I'm speaking broadly here. I'm not trying to, you know, generalize or anything. Okay. I'm just saying what I see. You know, you could just use like an example. The dude that's like doing the job that he hates, like he's not really thinking about what he's doing or where he's at. He's just thinking like when he's going to get home, he's going to watch some TV.
How do you know he's thinking that?
Well, I'm just assuming. I'm just looking at past behaviors. I'm looking at how humans interact, and also empathic sensitivity, being able to pick up on people's thoughts and their emotions and their feelings just from feeling people's energy. That's another skill you develop.
I have noticed that some people clearly pick up other people's energies.
Absolutely.
And I know that I'm guilty a lot in my past of being wrong about what people are thinking. Yeah, like assuming that this person did this action for this reason, when really, I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's the ego. That's the ego, because you're having a projection bias, or you're saying, okay, well, I think I know all of this. But the intuitiveness doesn't come from ego. It comes from, like, how do I know how to move my right arm? Or how do I know how to take a step forward? Or how do I know how to ride a bike? It's just an intuitive nature that you get. And once you get really good at it, the information's almost never wrong. It's very, very...
So you're saying that in itself is a skill that, or like a tool that you could sharpen?
Yes. These are all tools. So when you sit outside in your trail over there and you... intuitively sense that the leaves are waving back at you. That's not you making it up. That's you sensing that these things are conscious of you. You see? That's your tool that you're just sharpened a little bit. You just became more aware. Hey, the birds almost seem to be chirping in this melody, like they're communicating, or they're in some sort of pattern and discourse. And then you realize, of course, the animals are communicating back and forth to each other in these conversations that we may not be able to understand. But if you listen mindfully enough, you kind of understand. You know, how do you understand your dog or your cat? By studying them, by intuitively feeling their energy and observing their facial expressions, you get information off of them.
Plus, I speak dog.
And here's the funny part. The dogs speak better human than the humans will ever speak dog, because we're so disconnected for the most part.
Wait, say that again.
So I'm saying your dog is more aware. And again, I'm just generalizing, but...
one of my dogs is pretty dumb.
Well, that's what you think.
My dumbness. My dumbness on my dog.
And then it looks at you and it's like, this thing is so dumb. My stomach's been growling for 45 minutes and it hasn't fed me yet.
And she's probably thinking, this thing's so dumb, he's willing to pick up my shit.
Exactly. And I do nothing but run around and make a mess of the floor, you know?
Yeah, who's really running things here?
Yes, exactly. Who's the real pet is the question.
That's funny. So do you think, like, with, I mean, I know your sample size is half of mine, being your age. So, but you're clearly, you know, you got a head on your shoulders. With what you see going on in the world now, do you think we're at, and people have probably been saying this from the beginning of time, so this might just be the ego thinking, like, this time it's different and it's more important now. But do you think that we're at some kind of turning point as a species almost in regards to, like, paying attention or some type of awakening of some sort?
So the truth is, it doesn't really matter what I think, but it does matter what's happening, you know? Okay. And I would say that 100% it is happening. It's not like we're making it up and we're all just, you know, making it up. No, the age of Aquarius is the age of information. That's what we're in. We were in the age of Pisces for a while. Now we're in the age of Aquarius.
Well, how long are these ages? What do you mean?
2,000 years.
Where did that come from?
I'm pretty sure that it was from the Mayan calendar and these different astrological events, which basically observe the celestial bodies, which are the stars and the sun and the planets, and how they interact. And you have to think that these things are all projecting energy. They're all projectors of their own energy. So they're shifting the tides. We're in a cosmic sea. They're shifting the tides of how things are playing out, like a grand symphony, like an orchestra. And what's happening is that we shifted from Age of Pisces, which was the age of religion and doctrine and beliefs and like all that kind of stuff, to the age of Aquarius. This is a very well-known astrological thing, by the way. And the age of Aquarius is all about the age of enlightenment, the age of information. So humanity literally shifted in the cosmic calendar, this is the cosmic clock, into an age of enlightenment. And that's why we see so much more mindfulness and spirituality starting to be spread everywhere. Now, that also causes a lot of destruction and devastation, a lot of fear, because people just probably, if you're still listening to this conversation, you know.
I think anyone's still listening.
Well, I don't know, you know. If you're still listening to this conversation, you're an incredibly open-minded individual, because hearing the things that I say, I understand it could sound crazy. But living the way that I've lived, it would be crazy of me not to say anything.
Gotcha.
It would be even more crazy if I just kept my mouth shut and just like pretended. We can't pretend anymore. So the universe is becoming conscious that it is in fact the universe. That's what's happening. Hmm. God's becoming self-aware that it's God.
Interesting. We mentioned the word psychedelics a few times here. So in the beginning of the pandemic, I was, I needed to do things with my time. My gym had been shut down and it was super stressful. And I felt the need to compartmentalize that part of my life and hide it, because I couldn't do anything about what was going on. I lost my income and it was super stressful. And I was like handcuffed with it. And it was very emotionally challenging. So like I put away and I just started walking. And I had mentioned on the channel before, I started walking after dinner with my daughter every night, which has been a total blessing because she's going to college in a couple months, or like the last year of her living in our house. I got to have like 300 walks with her. It was like amazing. But during the day I would walk because I wasn't at work, and I started foraging and looking and learning about mushrooms.
That's great.
And in this process I was also dipping my toe in a little bit of like psychedelic stuff, like micro dosing, really for trying to get some mental health benefits.
Yes.
And it was really helpful for me emotionally and mentally. It was able to help me like frame some things in a more positive light. It was very interesting. And I was like, I wonder what kind of mushrooms grow around here that are psychedelic. Like, can I find these?
And yes,
so I started looking like what grows in Maryland. And there's like this certain strain that grows in Maryland. So I started hunting for it. And I couldn't find any of them. And I went on a walk almost every day looking for them. And I talked to a shaman. I interviewed a shaman on the podcast. And he said, you know, like, they find you.
Yes.
Like, like if you're looking hard for them, you know, unless you're really ready, you're not going to find them. So, and that was interesting. But then, like, as I started looking, I was getting better at finding, as if like my eyes would be drawn. Now, not those particular mushrooms, but I was getting better at seeing mushrooms. So like now I could go for a walk with other people and I see so many of them more than they do. But this is the interesting thing that comes back to the question I just posed about, like, is there some kind of awakening? So last year I was on these Facebook pages of groups that hunt for these things, and they like show what county they're finding them and such. And there was like a general consensus of like, and it was an average year of what people were finding. And then this year where everybody's gone through all this mayhem and shit, and for many people still are.
Yep.
I'm still not finding any, but I'm not devoting as much time to them. Like, I know I can't find them. I have to drive somewhere first. And most of my walks, I just walk from my house. But the consensus online is that there's like an explosion. Like, they're getting so many. And I wonder, like, is this the Earth? Is the Earth providing more of these because people are ready?
Yeah. Yeah. That's your, like, your intuitive sense is right. Now, the logic is like, that's stupid. The mushrooms aren't real. You know, they don't talk to you. The Earth doesn't talk. That's the programming from kindergarten, right. You know? Where your imagination was beaten out of you by your right, school right. teacher.
You need to think this.
Yes, and that is the biggest crime to humanity ever. To tell somebody how to think. To tell somebody how to perceive reality. Because you're limiting an infinite expression of the one creator. So you should never do that. Or I don't like to do that. See, even me telling you should never do right. that. You know, that's not a good idea. And I think you told me that last time we talked. You said something about that and I reflected on that. 5 years ago, you said you should not tell people. It's funny I'm saying this. You basically hinted to me. You said it's not a good idea to say you should try this or that because that basically is like you imposing your will upon someone.
That's religion. Like, it's dogma.
Right. So you said that to me, and I said it again.
It stuck with you.
And it stuck with me, and I realized, oh, wow. Like, yes, my intentions were good because I was trying to help my sister. She was going through stress. I was like, why don't you try meditation?
But oh, that's why I came up. I remember now. Yeah.
But the way that I was doing it wasn't working. And that's the same thing with the psychedelics. You can't push it on somebody. You can't tell them. Most people are not ready. Right. A lot of people are not ready. They're definitely not ready for some of the experiences that are awaiting them on the other side. But you seem to be ready.
I don't know. I mean... microdose. I don't know how ready I am. I had a bad experience as a teenager. I did psychedelics a bunch of times, but one time was really bad. And then I've been kind of scared of kind of really diving in since then. But so I do find them helpful in really tiny doses for me. That's where I'm at now. And I think that's probably why I'm not finding them out there. Because the ones that grow around here are apparently pretty strong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe I'm just not ready for that and I'm okay with that. I just find it interesting that collectively it seems like there's more this year at a time where maybe that's what the world needs.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what's happening.
If that's the case, then it's at least interesting to think about. And, you know, it makes you wonder what is kind of around the corner for humanity. Because sometimes, like, when you look at what's happened over these last, you know, whatever months, years, sometimes I feel like humans don't deserve this planet.
No, like, they don't. Like, now you're thinking like the forest spirits.
Like if we need a do-over. Like, next species come, it's your turn. Like, we botched this one. The way we treat each other, the way we treat the planet itself. And, you know, it's tough. And when you have kids, it's like discouraging. And there's like a helpless feeling like, mm-hmm. like you can't help. Like, you can't fix it. And like, you know, how are the younger generations going to clean up this mess that people have left for them?
Well, that's why we have to be different. That's why we have to do our best. Like, you know, myself and you and your kids, you have to do your best. Every single one of us has to do our best to shine consciousness as much as possible. Through consciousness, they will understand. This is not a religion that we're teaching. This is you finding your own God within yourself. Hmm. And once you understand this, you understand the sacredness of everything. And going back to what you said about the plants finding you, you know, those plants that I mentioned to you, I'm not going to say them on camera, but those ones that I shared with you, they found me. I did not purchase them. They came to me through an acquaintance that I knew who delivered them to me. And I was feeling the call of these plants, these particular plants, for a long time. It's like, I got to go out of the country to do this. This is not even, you can't even find this in the U.S. They came to me. They came to me at a time when I needed them. And I was like, we have a message. They were like, we have a message for you. When you take us, you'll understand. I was like, I got the message. Thank you.
Interesting. I don't know what he's talking about, by the way.
Well, that's an Alan Watts reference, you know? Okay. He's like, when you get the message, hang up the phone.
Oh, interesting. So I think I've heard him say that, yeah. There's a channel that has a lot of his little, like, his work in little pieces, like 5 to 10 minute clips.
With music?
Some of them have music, and I'll binge on it here and there.
Yeah.
But the combination of what he has to say and his accent.
Yes, the accent always gets people.
Resonates with me, yeah. I love it. I find it and very soothing, and like it's kind of mind-bending, and sometimes like I can't follow, I can't get it, it's a little over my head, but he's got an eloquent way of getting his ideas out.
He's a wordsmith for sure.
Yeah, definitely. The world is, you know, grateful that he exists.
Yeah,
he's out there. It's interesting you mentioned about like you can't tell people to think. So another thing that is come up recently, my son, you know, when they were trying to reopen schools in this county, which you know, this county is like Talbot is this great school system.
Yes,
you
it
know?
Is.
Well, like we are very privileged, very spoiled to grow up in this.
It's like the number two richest county in the world in the country. So
yeah, so you know, I'm grateful that I got to go to school as a kid in this, even though it came at a price, because, you know, when I went to college, I learned that I grew up in a bubble and the world's not like this. But
yes, agreed.
So that was kind of like, I remember going to college and thinking like there was no racism anymore. Mm-hmm. Like it didn't exist. And then I got to college. I was like, wait, what? I thought this, we kicked this a long time ago. And that was a function of the area that we grew up in and the way that they shaped the village, like they shaped the town so that kids could grow up and not know that racism is a thing. It was very, you know, fortunate. But it was kind of a lie. Not a lie, it was just, it wasn't true for everywhere. So, but in this recent, like, shutdown of the schools and then the reopening, this county, like, really shit the bed with the reopening. Like, they, and I know it was hard to do, and they probably had voices from all different sides giving opinions, and there was no way they could do it where you weren't going to piss off a lot of people, no matter how you did it.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I don't envy their position by any means. The interesting thing was, when they dropped the ball, my son decided to not go back when they reopened it, because they reopened it in such a ridiculous way. So he homeschooled for it was probably around 3/4 of the year, mm-hmm. something like that, maybe a little bit more. And you know, he had to think of his own curriculum.
Very good.
And because they've been teaching him what to think all this time instead of how to think all this time.
He doesn't know what to do.
He didn't know how to think. And I was, as an observer, I was like, this is really interesting. And it made me think, like, I had already lost faith in the public education system.
Yeah.
But, like, this was the dagger for me. I was like, interesting. Mm-hmm. Here he is. I'm glad we're finding this out now. Then when he's 18, it was like, he really struggled with thinking of an idea of a way to learn. So not only was his relationship with learning not really optimal, it's not like he looked forward to go to school to learn, he looked forward to go to school to be with people.
Right.
With friends. So they didn't help him cultivate a healthy relationship with learning, and they didn't really teach him how to think on his own so he can create his own learning experiences. And it was a real struggle for him to like create things to do to learn from.
Yeah.
And I had to help him give ideas, and you know, eventually he got better at it, he got on a roll with it, and he did a really good job, and I'm fucking like over the moon proud of how he did it. But it was interesting, and it made me think about the school system, like how, you know, it's not as valuable as it used to be with the flow of information now. Like, look at you, you're this young guy and you have all this very interesting information that most kids don't have, and younger generations are gonna need people that are still young to like learn these ideas from. But like a long time ago, if you wanted to learn things, you really had to be where the books were.
Mm-hmm.
And the books were at the schools and the colleges and so forth. But now, first of all, we don't even know what's in the books is 100% accurate, because we've learned a little bit about bias and propaganda, and like we've all kind of witnessed agendas being deployed onto people. And like now with the flow of information with internet, you can pretty much learn anything you want to wherever you are if it's something that you want to do, and you could take it upon yourself, and you could you know, learn how you want to think for yourself. And I think there's a lot of people out there that don't have that skill very sharp.
And That's through the, I think that's the whole creative process. That's the I'm a creator being energy, where you're like, okay, nobody else, see, humans are actually so lazy in the fact they have gotten used to people telling them how to think. Now, seeing this from an outside perspective, if somebody tells me what to do, I really don't like it. Like, you know, somebody says you have to be here at this time, I'm like, nah, I'm sorry, I can't do that. You know, that's why I work for myself. And so the way that I came about this with the whole, you know, with my whole business in college and everything, I'm looking at this, all the majors, and I'm like, I don't like this major. I don't like any of these majors. I don't like any of these fields because all of them are, you know, they're assuming all these things in the way that they're teaching the information. So I was like, I got to do something where I think completely for myself. So what do I know? Well, I know all this spiritual stuff, but I don't think I can explain it. So I had to learn the skills, how to make videos, how to record videos, how to edit videos, how to make websites, how to make free, you know, landing pages that people click on, they get a free guided meditation or free ebook, or I don't know if you guys do that. I'm sure you guys do, right?
We do some stuff that I don't do any of that stuff. I did check out your website. I think you need a little more work on it.
Well, we actually have updated our website, and I have two websites.
Okay.
So you were looking at it when I had not done the updates, and okay. Now I have a school. I built an entire school of mysticism.
Oh, I look forward to checking that out.
All right. So that's actually, it's launching in about a week and a half.
Oh,
and
cool.
So we have people waiting at the door, ready to just break the door down.
Oh, nice. You know? For you, man.
So I was like, all right, I'm an extremely creative person. I got to think of a way to bring this all together full circle, but also learn all the skills. And let me tell you, not one of those skills did I learn in school, maybe besides how to speak. And how to write, like, you know, English. Other than that, I didn't learn how to do my taxes. You know, doing this tax year, that was a lot of stress for me because I had no idea how to do it, and I had to fill out all these forms and go with my tax accountant, and I had to learn how to coach people, how to do life coaching. I had to learn how to even talk to people on the phone, how to sell my products, how to edit the videos, as I said, how to post on social media.
Are you doing this all yourself?
Yes. And now I have two people that I'm working with, and they're basically my team. But for the first year, I had to learn this all myself. And so I learned more in that year than I ever did at school. But it also grew so much information, which I didn't even think was possible. You know? And I'm sure that right now I can laugh at myself and look at myself as an amateur in 20 years. You know, right. And be like, oh, wow, that was pathetic. I can't believe I got to hide, private those videos.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to be a critic yourself. I mean, you're always going to look back yourself. I mean, most people say nice things about what I put online. Every time I look at the things I post,
I know.
It grosses me out.
Yes, I feel you.
I hate it. Like, yeah. I feel like, why do you say those things? This is the dumbest thing. And
we do it for them. We don't do it for ourselves.
I don't know what I'm doing it for. I'm just still learning.
I think you're doing it for others, because
I'm trying to help others. For
yes,
sure.
That's the whole.
I am passionate about helping others improve their life.
Yes, you know? I think that's what it's all about. That's the higher aspect of consciousness that we all carry.
I'm trying to raise my frequency.
Raise your frequency, exactly.
So that frequency idea, that's a constant oscillation, though. Like, it's never, like a steady state thing.
No, not really. It's kind of like, are you ever steady on your gas pedal when you're driving a car? Maybe unless you have it on auto lock or auto drive. No, it's always fluctuating a little bit. Now, you're going to have a baseline frequency, which as you have these mystical experiences and as you go into more depth in your consciousness, you definitely have a raised frequency. And everybody can feel that off of you. They can see it when you talk. They can see it when you communicate, whatever. Even the way your posture is, the way your body is, your health, everything. It's all connected to your frequency. It's all connected to your energy.
It's interesting. I love the talk of energy. I'd like to take a deeper dive into that stuff. I think maybe we'll save that for part two sometime.
Definitely, yeah.
I have some like devices that are energy devices that I play with. I guess they're called like, I don't know, biohacking technologies or whatever.
I love that stuff.
And I'm into this. So maybe we'll do a session about that and how it interacts with our biology.
Yes, that's cool stuff. Radionics. I'm sure you're familiar with the word radionics, right?
I think I've heard of it, but I couldn't describe it.
So that's the whole thing with the frequency. Now they've made the technology available to measure these instruments. So You get me one of those EMF meters.
Oh, I have one of
those. I'll put my hand near it. We'll see if that thing starts cranking up.
Oh, no kidding. Well, maybe we'll do that on the next one. We'll do it in live and see.
Yeah.
See if you could move your water bottle and see if you change the frequencies.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of energy changes that can be registered off of the technology. And, you know, obviously it's not good when you're recording because then the recording will just phenomenally delete and you're like, well, I proved it, but it got deleted in the process. And that nobody no, that's the way that the mind actually works.
Okay.
The universal mind works. It'll be like, oh, you're trying to show off. That's ego. Let me delete the footage for you real quick.
Oh, interesting.
So it's like a big brother almost.
Interesting.
You
okay.
know? But I actually
believe, but I have the measurement tools, so we'll
I actually have almost like 100 videos on my YouTube channel of me airbending. So there's plenty of proof for people that are skeptical
of airbending
of aerokinesis of telekinetically moving things with my mind and my energy, where it's like there's no way it's possible with a fan, you can't do this with cheating, like none of that. So I can send you some of those, you can check them out, or you know, you guys can check
it
out.
So where, speaking of which, as we wrap this up, tell people where do they check you out.
So you can check me out on The Matrix Unveiled on YouTube. That's the channel. I'm sure you guys will have it in the link. And The Matrix Unveiled on Instagram, on Facebook. And thematrixunveiled.com is our main website. And the School of Mysticism, which is launching on June 24th, is thematrixunveiled.mn.co. So if you just go to my YouTube channel, you'll see all of the links and everything that you need to connect with me and dive deeper into the information. And we go pretty hardcore with some of the stuff that we talk about.
Cool. Well, Dhanush, I'm grateful that you came in and did an in-person podcast, man. I think there's a bright light in you, and
Thank you, brother.
Watching you shine it.
Thank you.
It's great. You should be proud of yourself. And for the listeners out there, thanks for tuning in. I hope you made it through this one.
Yeah.
Airbending is mind-bending.
Mind-bending.
There you go. For the listeners out there, always grateful for your listening. Stay tuned for more episodes coming soon. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks again for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I sure did. It was great to reconnect with Dhanush after several years, and boy, he's really grown up since I've seen him last. This was exciting. It was an opportunity to just chat with a young, passionate man that really thinks, I would say, outside of the box, and I think that's really important. There's a lot to this world that we seem to understand. It's very easy to comprehend with our senses, but I think there's a lot more that we don't really understand. And there's a lot more that we don't take in from our senses so easily. And I think it's an intriguing exploration to try to discover what else is there. And that part of that is having conversation with people about these topics. Even though it might feel kind of weird, like your footing isn't really strong and you're not really grounded in your ideas, they're just ideas. And I think it's fun. I really do. It's a form of like play with language. Also, I do think there is something to learn. And I know in my own practice of meditation, I've delved into some areas that have made it very clear to me that there are other states of consciousness than what we seem to think is the regular, the everyday experience that we're all so familiar with. So not only do I like to practice, it's fun to be able to talk about these things, even though I'm not really sure what's true. But you know, even though we have beliefs of what's true, I don't want to get attached to those beliefs. I want to keep an open mind, and it's fun to learn new things and to hear other people's experiences with that. And it was really fun to do that today with Dhanush. So I really enjoyed it. I hope you did too. And if you have any questions about some of the things that we talked about today, just put them in the comments and I'll do my best to respond. Have a great day.